on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and this is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein today. How are you doing?
Doing all right. It was a very interesting day today.
Yeah, it was. We got, you know, interesting political stuff we talked about yesterday. Greece voting.
Greece just said yes. Their vote came through five minutes ago.
Yeah. So, everybody, welcome to InvestTalk. This is the July 15th edition, and it's Wednesday. Appreciate you being with us. We thank you for joining us on the radio, online streaming, of course, all the podcast subscribers. I think we're about 110,000 a month now.
120-something.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's kind of nice. Seems to be going up every month. And as you can tell, people calling us from all over the country, or the world for that matter, asking questions. So we really welcome your questions to ask anytime you want. Our lines are now open. They're always open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, so you can call us right now if you want to join the conversation. And as always, our mission is to help you become a better-than-average investor. Since it's the wedding season and you've been invited to one recently, it brings up the question of life changes. Have you been invited to a wedding recently?
I was in a wedding three months ago, and I was invited to another wedding, one of our employees.
I wrote about this on the Premium Newsletter a week or so ago. The bride typically knows what centerpiece will sit on the guest table. The groom knows exactly where he intends to have his bachelor party. That's about it, though. But do they know if they will share a bank account? Many times, they keep separate accounts. And there's no right way to do it, by the way. The right way to do it is make sure you both agree. That's what you need to do. You can have separate accounts. You can have joint accounts. You can have one account. There's no one right way. But just like anything financial, you need to talk about it. You need to think about debt. You need a credit card debt. Especially newlyweds, you know, what kind of debt are you carrying? Are you carrying school debt? You still have that? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to address it as a married couple? So there's always several layers of the onion to peel back when it comes to major life changes, such as a wedding, such as retirement, such as starting collecting Social Security. All those are major life changes that you have to really give some thought to.
And as when you're married, as you know now, that it's collecting Social Security becomes kind of complex.
It's not simple anymore. That's why there's a whole book on it. Guess what, yours, that we've been talking about recently. But it is. It's an issue. I had an email today about it. Question was whether the person who sent me the email, should I take my Social Security at 60, I would get this much. At 65, or I would get this much. And at 70, I'd get this much. Which would be the better? He knew exactly what he was going to get. So it was very simple for me. You wait till 70 if you have to, if you can. I'll only take it earlier if you have to. And you have to means you need the money, or maybe you're pretty ill or you're sickly and you know you won't live very long. Yeah. There's some have-tos there's some reasons that you can take early. Anyways, let's get to work and answer some questions. Sometimes marriage counseling and financial planning cross paths. Our number is 888-99-CHART. So if you have questions about that, hey, I can give some marriage counseling. I can't.
You used to do marriage counseling, correct?
I did what was called engaged encounters.
Engaged encounters.
Where me and my wife would talk to, engaged couples about their, planning to be married.
Mm-hmm. That was through the church, right?
Yeah, through the church. It was a required course. It was very interesting. It was very, very interesting.
I'm sure you got some interesting answers as well.
Yeah. My favorite one, my favorite one was, it was 2 weeks before the wedding, and they were really late in this engagement count. You're supposed to do it way before that. And we asked them, well, where are you guys going to live? The husband assumed they were going to live with his parents at the groom. And the bride assumed they were going to rent an apartment 2 weeks before they get married.
They haven't talked about this.
They haven't talked about it.
That's called lack of communication.
So let's get to work answering some questions. 888-99-CHART. We're always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And here's a question that came in earlier.
Hello, Steve. First of all, thank you for your advice on air and off air. Great show. I have a question. I'm about to start a new job, and the company does not match in the 401k. They do provide 401k, but do not match. And I was wondering if it is advisable for me to put my money in their 401k or put it in an IRA. I have 401k investments in two other previous employers, and I just want to know what your suggestion is, if I should go with an IRA or go with this company's 401k that does not match. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Well, I would first roll the old 401ks into an IRA, and if the company does not match, I would start by putting money into the IRA, but you're limited. The IRA only has, what, I think 6,000?
Yeah.
Whereas the 401k is like 17.
18,000.
18,000. Yeah.
See, 17,500 last year, 18,000 this year.
Yeah, see, I'm behind times.
Yeah.
I'm only 6 months behind.
Only 6 months.
So, but I would definitely start with the IRA. Why would I do an IRA versus a 401k? Because there's more freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm. Usually so. 401k, you're locked into a set number of mutual funds that usually are subpar or average at best. You know, might be a few good ones, but generally most of the choices aren't that great. So
you could put like 6,000 into your IRA. If you wanted to save more, you start contributing to your 401k.
Yeah. So the 401k, it's still tax deferred, can be a good vehicle, but because that lack of flexibility, you want to focus on the IRA first. But for everybody else who might have a 401k plan with their work that does match, you always go with that full matching contribution first.
888-99-CHART. What are we going to talk about today? Four ways to managing cash through retirement. That's going to be one of our major talking points. Four keys to managing cash through retirement. And I just talked to somebody about this today, a prospective client today, about she has a certain amount of money left, and she's trying to manage it through her retirement, you know, as she's part-time working. That's going to be our main topic. I want to talk about the, you know, we talked about it to death, this Greek thing, but we really haven't really addressed much about the IMF. I don't know if you did on Monday.
Not really. No, I didn't.
You've got to remember that the bailout that we're talking about that has been agreed to is with the ECB, the EU, I should say, the EU and Greece, but not including the IMF. And why am I mentioning the IMF also loans lots of money, and they have huge debt that the Greeks have to pay them back, and this was kind of set aside for this negotiations, and this may be a problem that will come up big time later.
Yeah, so it's the European Commission, the European Central Bank. They're the ones that are kind of came up with this deal with Greece, and IMF is not liking it.
But you know, we've been talking about Greece so much. I think we're letting China not fall by the wayside, and that's probably a much bigger issue. We've had a very steep fall in Chinese stock prices, a little bit of correction, and GDP numbers came out today, and I want to talk about China and what their prospects and how that might affect.
They grew 7%.
That's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't dispute that. We can't. You think that they're lying to us?
Well, from analysts, I hear that they the best tracker is electricity use, whatever that growth is, and they usually double it. Double electricity growth use, and that's a good measure of GDP. Electricity growth was 2%, so 4%, you know, roughly, is probably closer to reality.
Maybe. Yeah, well, you know they're not going to tell the truth. I mean, they're a closed society. They tell everybody what they want them to hear. And producer prices numbers came out. We might get to that today. I hope so. And do you remember Jeremy Siegel?
He's the Perma Bull.
He is the Perma Bull. He still thinks 20,000 on the Dow by the end of the year is well within reach. Just
so
let you know.
That would be another 2,000. That would be another over 10%.
A little bit over 10%.
And market's still roughly
I think
flat
that's possible, here. But it's going to have to become in the last quarter or so.
Yeah.
I think it's possible. So I'm not going to dismiss what the possibility. Why? Once we get the Federal Reserve's rate increase, the first one, I think they're going to be kind of one and done kind of sort of thing. that'll be behind us, and the investors and traders will stop worrying about it. So you might get a rally just because they might be done. There's absolutely no financial reason for them to raise rates. There's no inflation to speak of. There's no hot economy to slow down. And that's their two things that they worry about. So why are they raising rates? Only because they're really, really, really low.
And they want ammunition.
Yep, to fight the next recession. So they want to be higher. That's it. There's no really justification. So I think there might be one and done, meaning one and then wait a long time before the next one.
Yeah, 6 months.
Do you think it's going to come in September, or December, or next year?
I think it'll come in December.
Yeah.
But I think in September, they're going to say, it's coming in September. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
I think it will be pretty much data dependent. If the numbers continue to improve, we're going to get it in September. If they don't, if they kind of stay where they are, I agree with you. They're going to wait till December. But we'll see, won't we? We're all waiting for it. I have a new day for our portfolio checkup. It's August 4th in San Jose. I will be meeting with a limited number of listeners on August 4th. To save your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment.
I think you already have, what, 3 appointments that day? 4?
Something like that. I really don't look at it until I have to go and say, okay, how many people am I meeting with? Who am I meeting with? Because usually, I just don't keep track of that stuff. Right now, it's July 15th. We're ready to take any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHARGE, how you can reach us. And this is Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Saeed in Oakland. He wants to talk about Fitbit. How you doing, Saeed?
Hi, how you doing? Today Fitbit had a good run. And it went up like $47.
Yes.
What do you think about the... are you going to have the... an earning coming up soon, earning date.
Earnings, huh? Well, for everybody out, who is Fitbit? Fitbit develops those wearable connected health and fitness trackers, like a watch that just tracks fitness. And it came out on IPO just recently. It IPO'd on June 18th of this year. And it has been pretty much of a screamer up.
Yeah, an IPO at $20 a share. Now it's at $47 a share. Their earnings look like they're come out August 5th. So you have about 3 weeks.
Their sales growth quarter over quarter quarter is very high, a couple hundred percent, okay? And they're very hot. My biggest concern, I talked about this, I don't know, a week or so ago, my biggest concern with Fitbit is competition. Mm-hmm. I think Apple is going to be getting into this.
They are with the Apple Watch, but I think the biggest thing is it's just way too expensive. I mean, if you've listened to our show or anybody out there who's listened to our show for an extended period of time, we're not big fans of IPOs. Yeah, they get hot and they go up a lot in the short term. And, you can get lucky and, do pretty well in the short term. But long term, they tend to fizzle out. So, could the momentum keep going on Fitbit? Absolutely, it could. Is it high risk? 1,000%. It's extremely high risk. It's a $10 billion market cap. And they do revenues trailing 12 months of about $1 billion. So 10 times sales. Cash flow is positive, but it's still very weak, very low compared to its market cap. So value-wise, it's a horrible value.
Yeah, so you're making a bet on momentum here. Mm-hmm.
And that it can maintain its growth this.
Yeah, if it doesn't maintain 200% a quarter, it's going to fall.
Yeah, that's the big issue with this. Like Steve said, 200% a quarter. If they come out with earnings and revenue goes up 150% year over year,
it's going to fall.
It's probably going to fall.
Yeah. Even though 150%, wow, that's great, but it's still going to fall.
Exactly. So that's why these are extremely high risk, because they can still have great growth, but if growth is slowing, they can get hit pretty hard and go down 20, 30% very quickly.
Yeah, so that's what you watch out for, slowing growth. Appreciate the call. We're glad we're with us for Invest Talk, everybody. What do you want to talk about? Pensions? Not as popular as they once were anymore. Hardly anybody gets a pension, but maybe some people still have them. Sometimes those come from options to take a lump sum or a monthly payment, those pensions. Sometimes they'll pay you a lump sum of them. So maybe you should take a look. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Making the transition to investing in your 60s and beyond requires a new way of thinking about investments. 11 investing tips for 60-somethings. That's our talking point for Thursday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I didn't tell you what the market did today. It was kind of boring, that's why. It was down three points on the Dow, down 6 points on the NASDAQ, down 2 points on the S&P. Most of the day it was up, but there was, toward the end of the day, there was showing riots and stuff outside Greek, and they were voting on, and before the vote came through and all that stuff. So I think the market kind of got a little sweaty in the palms there just before the end of the day.
Yeah, and we closed down about 1.5 on the S&P, 3 on the Dow, and 6 on the NASDAQ. So it was still closed down, but pretty much flat for the day.
Yeah, flat for the day. But it was up most of the day. You know, nothing great. Nothing. It kind of a nothing day, period. So we'll see. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Did I give the right number?
Yes.
Okay. Job number one, everybody, is to answer questions on the show. Our 24-hour listen line is always open. Same number, 888-99-CHART. Peter called from Escondido.
Thank you for taking my call. If you try to kind of find an evaluation of the company, what factors are you looking at? Earnings per share, net sales, net profit, price to book value? What would be like the most important factor that you start with when you start to try to analyze the particular company? I appreciate your help.
All right, how much time we got left in the show? We got about 35 minutes.
Okay. There's like a million ways.
We can fill the whole show up with this.
Okay, I'll start with something. I'll let you get into it, Justin, but I'll start with the basics. You want a company that's making money and growing its sales and growing its earnings, and profit margins are stable or growing. That's very simple. Mm-hmm. Okay, but there's so many other things that you need.
Yeah, and I like to dig a little deeper besides just the surface level numbers, right? So there's obviously there's P ratio, and if you take the inverse of the P ratio, you get an earnings yield. Well, earnings are subject to
manipulation.
How's that? By accountants. There you go. So I like operating earnings. Basically, what are your operating profits? Not because you can get earnings from other areas. You can sell. Didn't GE used to do this a lot? They would sell a building right before the end of the end of the quarter, so that they booked the profits on the building.
Yeah, the key was that GE for years and years and years beat its quarterly earnings by a penny every quarter. Mm-hmm. Well, they manipulated the numbers
because they would sell a building, and that's not operating
or
earnings.
They would adjust inflation. Depreciation.
Yeah, they do those type of things. So that's why operating earnings are extremely important. I love cash flow. Free cash flow, meaning money that's going to the pockets of shareholders, to the bottom of the balance sheet, and adding value to value of the company. Profitability, return on assets, that's a big profitability metric I like to use. Revenue growth, you know, is it growing its revenue base? You know, you talked about earnings, but revenue is hard to manipulate as well. Mm-hmm. It's how much money is coming into the business. So it's there are a ton of factors, but those are some of our favorite.
And what this means is the average person would have a heck of a time trying to figure this out. Mm-hmm. It's just very difficult.
You got to have the right data, and a lot of that's not free.
Yeah,
it's the basic stuff's free.
Yeah, it's just not out there anywhere. Yeah. IMF signals it could walk away from the Greek bailout deal. Okay, so I won't beat this in the ground, but we know we have a deal between the EU. And the Greek. The EU with the ECB, European Central Bank, have agreed to, okay, you make these steps, Mr. Greek, we will give you this much money. Okay, I won't go into all the details there, but that's what they're really saying. We're going to give you some more money if you take these steps. The whole discussion is kind of leaving out one of the major partners in this deal, and that's the International Monetary Fund, who also has lent billions of dollars and is still lending billions of dollars to Greece. Mm-hmm. But they have said clearly that the debt needs to be restructured before they will even consider any more money coming from them. Mm-hmm. And they're a big part of this.
And in their bylaws, they say they will not extend a bailout or, you know, financing to countries whose debt is deemed to be unsustainable.
Exactly. And they have deemed that it's unsustainable. Greek's debt is unsustainable.
Without further write-downs. That's what it is.
Forgiveness.
You got to write down this debt. Right now, the European Commission is saying, okay, we'll extend the terms, meaning you're going to they're not paying in the terms of this bailout. They're not going to be paying any principal or interest on their current debt for, I think it's like 20 years, 30 years
something
or something. And the IMF is saying, yes, that's part of it, but also there needs to be a haircut. You need to cut, say that they have about 300 and call it 50 billion euros in debt. The IMF is saying that 50% needs to be cut. Yeah, 50%, 40%, yeah, something
huge.
Yeah, big.
Now, just to make sure it's clear, you're clear. The IMF is not involved with what the EU and Greek just did. Mm-hmm. But down the road,
in March, their bailouts, the second bailout expires for each of those members at different times. The European Commission just ended last month, end of June. But the IMF second bailout, it goes all the way till March of next year, which will come quicker than people think.
Yeah. So that's the problem that you have here. It's not a done deal. It's a kick down the street a little bit.
Kicking the can down the road.
Coming up next half hour, InvestTalk Portfolio, the hot today, gone tamale type of portfolio. I'm financial advisor Steve Pisa with Justin Klein today. You can reach us right now at 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, as you know, but if you have a question between programs and you just need to have it answered, well, give us a call. We'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Linda. I got a question regarding Cisco, the symbol CSCO. What do you think of this company? I would appreciate your opinion about it. And would this be the entry point? Thanks a lot.
Okay, Cisco Systems, everybody, manufactures switchers, routers, and other networking and communications hardware for businesses and home appliances. It is a big blue chip type company, $142 billion market cap. Actually, $143 billion market cap. It's growing very slow, single digits, maybe 5% in the last year at the most. The year before, it was not growing even that much. So it's a slow grower, pays a 3% dividend. It's a big blue chip company. Justin, is it a good buy point?
It's an okay buy point. It's definitely come down, dip below the 200-day moving average, now poked its head back above it. You know, technically, it's making lower highs, it's higher lows, so it's kind of like a wedge formation. So it's kind of neutral from a technical standpoint. From a fundamental standpoint, I think it's fairly cheap. You know,
yeah,
modest debt, very good cash flow, 3% dividend yield, like you said, and that's growing. And it has room to grow because its payout ratio is only 45%.
Yeah, it's 19% return on equity, which is a pretty good number.
So. One thing that I like about it, and I would say the most, but I really like, is that back in 2009, in the midst of the recession, their earnings only fell a little bit. It made $1.56 in 08 and $1.35 in 09. That's a drop, but considering how bad the economy was, it's fairly modest. So I actually like it. It's a kind of a lower risk tech play with a nice dividend, good cash flow, low debt, not a big grower, but you're getting good value there.
Cisco, CSCO, everybody. That's kind of an interesting play. Let's talk about producer prices inflation. Today, the producer price came out, and we showed a 0.4% increase. Jump in gasoline prices, and believe it or not, chicken, eggs, pharmaceutical preparations, cigarettes. But 0.4%, if you look at it more of a core, it was like up 2%. And that was more of the expectation was up 2%. But it was a little higher than expected. But is it something to worry about from the Federal Reserve point of view? Probably not. This is the producer price index.
Yeah, I don't think they're certainly not worried about inflation. The question is it high enough to be able to raise rates, like you said earlier, you know, where the numbers don't say they really need to raise interest rates quickly because the economy still isn't humming very, you know, hunting, going very strong, moving along very strongly, and inflation is very high. So they don't really need to, but they need that ammo.
Yeah, try to always remember, what is the Federal Reserve's job? What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to try to keep the economy on a steady path. How do they do that? Well, they kind of have a blunt instrument to do that, and that's a raise and lower interest rates. That's their main instruments in which they do that with. And rates are very, very low. So if they want to slow down the economy, they raise interest rates because it costs more to do things. If they want to speed up the economy, they lower interest rates. If they want to fight inflation, they raise interest rates. This is just a very broad overview of what they do. So there's no reason to raise rates to fight inflation or fight a strong economy. So as we said, you know, why are they raising rates? Only because they're so low. That's it. So this number doesn't frighten anybody. We haven't had numbers that frighten anybody about inflation forever.
Yeah, they don't want us to be like Japan, which has been at zero interest rates for 25 years now.
Yeah, but they had a whole different kind of problem. They never failed.
They had a giant real estate bubble. That's what we had.
Well, then they never, with the companies going out of business.
That's what we did. The only company that went out of business was Lehman Brothers.
No, that's not the only company.
Okay, the only large company that went out of business.
Well, Japan doesn't let any companies go out of business. They make other companies buy them.
Yeah, that's what we did. Guess what did J.P. Morgan buy?
Well, I'm just saying, we don't do it as much as Japan did it. In other words, forcing other companies to buy other companies. That's what Japan does.
Yeah, we did something very similar.
Well, we did through the federal government coming in to saving them in one way or another.
Well, yeah, that was forcing. Part of it, but also privately, like I said, J.P. Morgan bought Merrill Lynch.
They wanted to.
Sorry, Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch. J.P. Morgan bought Washington Mutual.
There
was a lot of consolidation within the financial industry.
I would agree. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that Japan has a whole different outlook of not letting companies go bankrupt than we do. We will, as long as it doesn't kill our financial system.
Yes.
If it wasn't a meltdown of our financial system.
Like AIG should have went under.
Yeah, they should have been out of business. But
we helped Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, should have went under.
I agree. Great, because that was so integral part of the whole financial system.
MBIA should have went under.
But again, the only company I think we saved that we should not have saved, big company, was GM.
GM?
We should have let them file bankruptcy. They weren't that big of an impact on the financial system. And that was, I think, more to do with politics than anything else.
Probably.
But the other companies probably was a good idea to save them, because it saved our financial system. Interesting, though, there's really no reason for the Fed, going back to what we originally talked about, to raise rates. You're listening to Invest Talk. We try to be a source of straight talk about your money. We welcome any and, of course, all money questions. 888-99-CHARGE, how you can reach us on our 24 hours a day, 7 days a week answering line. If you call between the hours of 4 and 5 Pacific time, we'd love to have a conversation with you. It's 888-992-4278.
And now, InvestTalk Portfolio Profile. Common portfolio flaws that can add too much risk or not enough growth to your retirement portfolio. Let's look under the hood.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. China came out with their GDP number today. As we mentioned earlier, it grew at 7%. 7% it grew. Okay, so was that a real number? Justin kind of had thought that maybe that wasn't a real number. Maybe it wasn't. I mean, I'm not saying it was, but that's what they reported today, and it was a lot better than expected.
It was interesting. So, the Chinese market went down.
Yeah, they didn't think it went down like 3%, didn't it?
Something like that.
Because maybe they didn't believe those numbers. Well, how about there's still 600 companies not trading on the index?
Well,
there's a lot of margin debt still.
The explanation was that because the GDP number was stronger than expected, there will be less stimulus.
Ah, that's true. That's true. Let's talk about portfolios, okay? We've been trying to give you some sample portfolios that I've seen come across my desk. And this one we're calling a hot today, gone tomorrow. This particular portfolio didn't have a lot of stocks in it, and I'll tell you what they were. You know, I'll tell you the symbols: NCP, which is Molly Corp; CRR, which is Ceramics Company. I forgot the name. Apple, Google, Baba, the new Chinese internet company; Netflix, Tesla, and FXI, which is ETF for China. Now, why do we call this segment Hot Today and Gone Tomorrow? Do you remember ECP, Molly Corp? A couple of years ago, we got calls every other day about why we should buy Molly Corp, because
it's rare earth. I think that was the biggest problem. It was the name rare earth, and people thought that these minerals.
It was a mining company.
Yeah, it was a mining company that mined rare earth minerals. And everyone got drawn into that name, that I want to be in something that invested in a company who mines minerals that are very rare and hard to find. And that's why they call them rare earth. But in reality, they weren't actually that rare. They just called them rare earth minerals because they weren't, you know, so abundant like coal and, you know, oil and things like that.
Well, it went from, I think it got up to $70. This is why I say hot today and gone tomorrow. Everybody was talking about it, shot up, and now it's worthless. It's bankrupt.
Well, if you focused on the actual earnings, you would have realized that it was, you know, it was just being pumped up, and the results weren't worth investing.
So what's wrong with this portfolio? First of all, there's not enough holdings. Second of all, it's very dominated by tech. Third of all, it's all over the place. Molly Corp didn't have any earnings. The next company that's in there is CRR, and it's not a bad company at all. I'm not trying to on Carbo Ceramics. It's actually a pretty decent company, but everybody got caught into the
shale
oil production, and that's what they produce a lot of material for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fundamentally, you had to kind of be concerned with that. Apple, fundamentals, you don't have to be concerned. Google, you don't. But these are very hot stocks in the news. Every one of these stocks, probably everybody already knows about. So everybody's focused on it. So how do you separate the Molly Corps away from the Apples? Mm-hmm. And how you do it, the Apples of the world? You do it through fundamentals. Mm-hmm. You do it through earnings and growth of earnings.
And a lot of times fundamentals aren't just the numbers, right? There's qualitative fundamentals and there's quantitative fundamentals. The earnings, that's quantitative, right? Qualitative is, well, what is their business? Is it a business that is profitable over the long term? Is it a business where other competitors can come in and take their business very easily? Is it a business that can sustain itself over the long run? Those are questions you have to ask yourself. Obviously, Apple has shown its longevity, but you know, a lot of these other companies, high-flying IPOs, they haven't shown that they can last over the long term.
That mean you can't invest with them. It just means you need to invest in them with your eyes open. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Exactly.
A successful portfolio is more than just the right stocks and funds, everybody. Now, if you have questions about portfolio design or management, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Tony in Cupertino. How you doing, Tony?
Yes. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. How you been?
Been fine. I'm calling about U.S. Steel. The symbol is X. It's come down from a high of 46 now, and it's down to about 18.5. And I wondered if it was worth getting into at this time.
Well, it's not going to make any money this year. It's going to lose 57 cents. It made $4 last year. So I got to find out why that happened. Did they sell something? That might have been why they made such a big profit. Next year, they're going to make $1.06. And it's an $18 stock, so that means it's going to have about an 17-18 PE next year. Sales are shrinking. There's no growth there. And, of course, we're talking about U.S. Steel. It's a very solid company. It'll probably be around a lot. To me, it's still overpriced. I don't think it's cheap enough. Justin?
On a technical basis, there is a lot of support down here.
At 18?
Yeah, but the problem is, like Steve said, it's all over the board. It's going to lose money this year, make money next year, made money the year before, but then it lost money the year before that, and it almost goes back and forth. Every year, it'll make money, and next year it'll lose money and go and flip-flop. So there's zero consistency with this name, and it's very, very risky, but it's certainly at support.
Yeah, it's in a big blue chip stock. It's not going to go out of business or anything. We're not suggesting that. It's just that it's going to be pretty volatile as far as worth.
If you handle the volatility, this is a good buy point. But if it breaks below that 1550 level, it's going much, much lower.
Tony, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Siegel thinks the Dow is going to be by 20,000 before the end of the year. That's a little bit more than 10% increase. And I will say this. I wouldn't be surprised if it's close. I wouldn't be surprised if we got a 5% bump by the end of the year. I don't expect to have anything great. 5%, that's a 10% increase. But I think it's mostly going to come right at the very end of the year.
Yeah, I think so. I think the summer is going to be pretty volatile.
What we've seen.
Yeah. I don't think the Greece thing is out of the news. I think there could be more issues. You know, we talked about the IMF. Mm-hmm. I don't think China is out of the woods either.
No.
Like you said,
they have more to go on the downside.
Yeah. When are they going to, what is it, 6 months? They're going to allow, the insiders can't sell for 6 months. Is that what it is? Or is that a year?
For China.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. They're changing the rules all the time. They're kind of like changing as they go, mm-hmm. making up things to try to keep the market from falling. But they want a free market. Guess what? You get the volatility of a free market.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Chinese people, they have a belief that the state is in control. Government will solve all their issues. And so,
well, because they grew up with that.
Yeah,
everything is controlled by the government.
Exactly. You know, and same have happened with real estate. You know, when real estate started to go down, the Chinese government tried to loosen the rules for financing and help control the deflating of the Chinese property bubble. And when people started seeing property prices go down and they realized it's not a sure bet that property prices are going to go up now, what do?
They move to the market.
They move to the stock market. And I think it's a lot harder to control the stock market than it is the property market.
And look how they're trying to control it. The different methods they're doing, they bought the money. They bought the government bought stocks through different government-owned entities. They would, the companies themselves would remove themselves from trading for a few days. Mm-hmm. I mean, massive amounts. There's still 600 or so I read this morning that are still not trading. So what is that? What happens when they come back? So they're doing different methods to try to control the slide. But in a free market economy, it went up 150% in a year. Of course it's going to come down. We would just assume that it would.
They're shocked because they've never had experience in this.
This is InvestTalk. Thanks for calling, everybody. We'll be right back.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And if you have a question on our talking point, for example, today, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage. Or you can get a note to Steve or Justin about it, and they'll respond. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
888-992-4278. Four keys to managing cash today and through retirement. Four. First one, differentiate between basic needs from enhanced lifestyle. And, I've talked about this just the other day, about millionaires next doors and how they become millionaires. It's because you separate with what you want with what you need. And in retirement, do you need a fancy car? Do you need that vacation property? Do you need to make those charitable gifts? You need to separate what you need from what you want. And a lot of people think they need things they just really want. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, remain flexible with annual withdrawals. I've talked to many clients or prospective clients about this. Taking too much money out is usually the problem. Not taking too little out.
You just had a conversation with, like you said, with a potential client.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
That was having that issue. You said, you're taking too much money out.
You're taking too much money out. You'll run out of money. There's a rule of thumb, 3 to 5%, 4.5%, being typical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the what are the things that you need to do to make sure that you don't run out of cash in retirement? Well, first is you need to differentiate between needs and wants.
Yeah, I did that. I did. You weren't listening as you were reading something there.
I was.
So I'm on number three, allocate assets.
There you go.
Okay. Allocate assets and manage risk based on cash needs.
Yeah, if you're need the money in the short term, next 6 months, year, you need to be conservative with that money. We hear a lot of, people say, oh, I'm going to buy a house in the next year. What should I put it in? Well, you need to put it in something safe, CDs, money market. You don't need to be going out there and buying stocks because guess what? You could lose 10, 20, 30% of your money very quickly in that, and then all of a sudden your down payment's gone.
Yeah, I like to separate my house money that I'm going to buy a house that I'm going to live in from my investment money because you can't take risks with that kind of money.
So, and just think of 2007, you know, people that had this money and they're ready to retire and they start to need that money. Well, the market went down 40%, 50%. And all of a sudden their nest egg has been cut in half and because they were taking too much risk with that particular money. So, and vice versa, you know, you don't want to be too conservative with all your money because you could be missing out on like the big games that we've seen over the past 6 years.
And finally, you know, there are times when you need to proactively lock in some gains because, you know, if you have you bought Tesla and it went up 500% in your retirement account, well, great, congratulations. You should probably lock in some of those gains. It's not going to go up another 500% most likely. So, you know, there's times that you kind of be proactive in that, locking in, taking some profits and reallocating into maybe a less risky asset or something, or even spend the money, you know.
And I think that's one of the biggest issues that people have is they see what happened recently, last few months, in a particular stock or asset class, and they think that's just norm. It's going to happen consistently. Rarely does that happen. That what happened the last 2 or 3 years is going to happen the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, let's get back to answering some questions. I was just told that we did not have enough time for the next question. I was too slow or too verbose. Maybe that's what I was. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. If you do have a question, you want to leave it with us, please call that number. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we try to put the question on the air the very next day. We do have a lot of economic numbers coming out the next couple of days. So I'm going to be reporting them on here on the show. If you can, please stay tuned in the next couple of days. You will find a lot of good information I'll share with you on that. Justin, do you think Greece, I have a great question. Do you think Greece will stay in the EU long term?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't either. We don't think they have a shot at staying in the EU. We don't.
And when you say long term, talking 2, 3, 4 years out.
Yeah, not yet. Eventually, they're going to kick out. The only way that could happen is that they're going to get forgiven all that debt, and I don't see that happening.
Over 50% of that debt needs to be wiped out. Yeah. Over 50%.
Yeah, and I don't see that happening. We're out of time today. If you have more questions about any money matter, use our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. Get your question to me. You can also send me an email through investtalk.com. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin and send us an email. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. And for everybody at KPP Financial, I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a good evening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.